What would you do if you're Zion? Would you play again?
You know, I know everybody, this is like the $50 billion question over the last 24 hours or whatever, 12 hours. I don't think it's that simple. First of all, we don't really know the extent of it. And if there were any risk to Zion Williamson whatsoever in terms of re-injury, if the knee is weakened, if there's an injury that could be aggravated in any way that could jeopardize him, then no, you don't play. But if they say it's a two-day thing, then he's totally fine after that. And let's just assume everything is you know, legit in terms of a diagnosis that's reliable. He's fine. Is there any difference between him playing now versus playing a week ago? There's risk every time you go out and play a game. There's been risk the entire season. Playing has increased his draft stock for certain. He wasn't number one in his class, but playing for Duke has made him the overwhelming, almost unanimous choice for the number one pick. So why stop? I mean, if that's the case, anybody could stop. The second you're locked in as the number one pick in years where there's a consensus, you could say, okay, good, mm-hmm. great. I've established my draft value. I'm just going to stop playing. Mm-hmm. Because there's no difference between anyone any year doing that and Zion now. I know people think the difference is because of the injury, but we don't really know what the injury is. And so what I'm saying again is, in absence of the diagnosis and the prognosis, which we don't know yet, why should we say that he should just shut it down because he hurt his knee? I mean, if it's a serious thing, if there's chance of re-injury, if there's chance of aggravation, if there's anything that would put him at more risk than he was 2 days ago, then sure. But if it's just a matter of, whoa, that was scary, don't play anymore, well, that could always happen. If that's the case, if you're going to make that argument, then logically guys shouldn't play at all. Yeah. Or they shouldn't play any time after they've established their draft position.
I would just say if I were – because I can only just do this putting myself in his shoes. If I were him and that happened, and it just became so real in that moment, right? And understanding that, sure. Okay, the thing that people tell me about that LeBron James says I shouldn't continue to play college basketball, that's not really going to happen to me. But it was damn close. Like, it might not be that serious, doesn't look that serious, but – man, that could have been a torn ACL very easily yesterday. It would have scared me if I was in his position. I would have said, I can't deal with the possibility of that looming over my head again. That's all.
Yeah, understandable. And I think that's the scare is to him, to anybody who's working with him, to the Duke program, to people who are watching at home, to everybody. Nobody wants to see a guy with a potentially promising career have it derailed by injury prematurely. But as I say, the risk last night is no different than the risk it was a week ago. And his draft position has long since been established. So if we're going to say he shouldn't play, then it's no different than saying anybody shouldn't play. Basically saying play until you get a scare or until you turn an ankle and then say, you know what, that's it. Every high-level draftee, every prospect who's going to be in the lottery, who's already locked in their position – should just stop playing as soon as they get a scare. I mean, I don't know what that does to college ball. I also don't know how rational it is, given that in general, this is a risky sport, and guys also play pickup. They work out in the off season. There are any number of ways in which you could get hurt. And this is a very specific circumstance, and again, we don't know the prognosis. So, depending on the severity of the knee injury, maybe it makes sense to shut down. But I think that depends on whether or not there's risk involved.
Well, let's, for the sake of argument, say that he's going to be fine. That it is what some people have been saying online, that it's a minor knee strain, and that ultimately he'll be able to go play basketball in a couple of weeks. I really like a lot of what you're saying, because it is complicated. It's not, to me, as black and white as, oh, well, he should just shut it down and preserve his draft slot and make sure that he's not injured and go into the NBA draft and get his money. If that's the decision that he wants to make, then I don't think that anyone can really criticize him for it. But I think that people are just mad at the NCAA, and they see something like this and they just immediately want to side with whatever they think is fair or that goes against the institution right now that is not paying these players when they're clearly worth something, where people are going in and paying Super Bowl prices to see them. And so I understand that aspect of what people are doing. And I understand, and especially the viewpoint of certain players. Like, I saw Jay Williams tweeting about it and saying that players have to be able to go right to the NBA and that they would be, more sensitive to this issue than other people. But there's also some stuff to me where I look at this and say, Zion Williamson wasn't the consensus number one before he went to Duke and started to establish this value. Like a guy like Joel Embiid, who did get hurt in college, it was the same thing. He was at Kansas sharing the limelight with Andrew Wiggins, was supposed to be the big superstar. But if it hadn't been for his, you know, injury before the draft, he probably would have gone number one as well. That there has been a benefit for these players to just be able to play and showcase themselves and prove that they are the number one overall pick. I just think that the one thing we can all agree on is why it's taking so long to allow these players to sell their likeness or profit off of who they are while they're in college.
Yeah, and listen, that part of it is, I don't want to say indisputable because there are people out there who do dispute it. I mean, listen, I'm with you, and I'm with anybody who says that these guys should be making something more off of their time in the NCAA, given what coaches make, given what the billions generated by college basketball and the tournament. Like, these guys should be compensated at a much higher degree than simply, you know, tuition waivers and whatever else. I believe in all that. However, and then the age limit is an issue too here too. However, this is the system we have. And until the system is changed, until and unless the system is changed, this is the path to the NBA. And you make a commitment. You sign your letter of intent. You get your scholarship, you get whatever, you know, compensation that they can give you, and, you know, your free, you know, tuition, free education for the 1 year you're going to be there. And that's the deal you make. So if you go and you establish your draft position, and then whether you get injured or not injured, and you just decide to shut it down, aren't you in some way reneging on a commitment you made to that program, to that coach, to those teammates, everything else? Now, it may be a rational reneging. It may be a justifiable one that we could all say, yeah, but hold on. You got the whole rest of your life, and you got a career and millions coming to you. You should just get out. That's fine. But again, if that's the rationale, if that's the approach we're going to take, that it's just to defy the NCAA and it's to defy the age limit and all these other things, then nobody's commitment means anything. And as soon as you establish a draft position, you can just say, okay, I'm good. You guys have a nice time playing in March. I'll be watching from the sidelines while I'm, you know, working on my weights and you know, conditioning and getting ready for the draft.
Yeah, and nobody wants that, and I don't think even the players would want that. And that's why I wonder where the conversation goes from here, because, yeah, there's the immediate outcry is to let the pay the players and let them go straight to the NBA. But I think it needs to be somewhere more along those lines where I know he has the $8 million in insurance money in case he is injured, but I feel like the next step or the first step has to be a way for guys to not want to do that and have a little financial incentive not to do that and kind of acknowledge that there can be differences between Zion Williamson and whoever's playing on South Dakota State coming off of the bench.
Yeah, and I think the same principles should apply across the board. Now, there's greater risk for the guy who's the consensus number one than the guy who's going to be a late first rounder or a second rounder because there's a rookie scale. And so, by definition, there's greater risk the higher up you're going to be drafted because it's more money. But the principle's the same. You know, why are you there? Well, you're there in part because you don't have a choice, right? You're there because the only way, I mean, there is another way. You could go to the G League. You could go play in China. You could go play in Europe. You can, you know, there are other ways to go spend your first year after high school while establishing your draft value to the NBA. But the most common one is the NCAA. And that's the system we have. So as I say, until we change it, until the NCAA starts paying players or until the NBA and the players union together remove the age limit, which, as I always try to emphasize, this is not the NBA. The NBA can't just wake up tomorrow and remove the age limit. It is a collectively bargained policy that the union agreed to back in 2005. Until they get together and decide to remove the age limit and figure out what all that entails in its place, then this is the structure everybody has to deal with. And as long as it's there, if you make a commitment, I think that it's reasonable to think that you stay with that commitment. You play through the season as long as you're physically able to.
What if he doesn't, though? What if Zion says, yeah, that was terrifying, and I don't want to have to put my family through that again. I don't want to even you know what? Thank you, Duke. You have created me as the number one consensus overall draft selection this summer, but I'm packing it in. I'm going to wait until I am selected first overall. Does that change the entire landscape? Is that move in itself enough to just totally change things?
It'd be really interesting. I wouldn't blame him for doing it. I think very few people would blame him for doing it. But I could see that where there would be a backlash if you were a Duke fan, a Duke booster, a Duke coach, a Duke player. if you are just someone who loves the college game and thinks that you've now been robbed of something fun and special in March, I mean, there will be people who will criticize, for sure. Mm-hmm. And you then wonder whether it's precedent setting, whether the situation that we've been discussing, this hypothetical we've been batting around, does it open the door to every highly ranked, highly rated player in the future to say, okay, I played November, December, whatever. You know, I got my run in. I got my draft value established, and now I'm stopping. Will it open the door to that? I don't know. It would be interesting to see, and it'll be interesting to see what the discussion is around Zion if he decides to shut it down. And again, there's a massive, massive qualifier here, which is it depends on how he's shutting it down and why. It depends on the actual diagnosis of the injury, which we don't know yet, because if it's considered minor and then they say he could come back in a couple days and he chooses not to, that's a different story and probably a different debate than if they say, yeah, this was fairly serious and he needs to, you know, be out for at least a few weeks. And then he says, well, I might as well make it the rest. I mean, I don't know. It's always just going to depend on degree when it comes to the injury and how he handles it from there.
Hey, before we let you go, we'd be remiss if we didn't get a thought from you on our Toronto Raptors and where you kind of see this, how you see this loaded Eastern Conference playing out and how they stack up against these other teams.
I mean, my standard answer has been that I'm as confused about the top of the East now as I was in the preseason, or probably more so now. The preseason, I thought Boston was the clear favorite based on their talent and depth and the guys they had coming back from injury. It just seemed like they were stacked. Obviously, the Celtics have been, a little bit off kilter all season because of what seems like just poor chemistry. So they've slipped, and it's getting late to think that they might turn it around. Milwaukee was not a team that anybody expected to be at the top of the East, given the drop off from Giannis to their next best player. And the Raptors and the Sixers were the other teams that you thought would be really strong all along, but they're all so completely different and none of them are established as powers. I mean, Boston pseudo, because they were, game seven of the conference finals, you could say that they're the most established and certainly the team that returned the largest core. But all four of these teams have still a ton to prove. And so you can't look at one and say, well, that's the team that already knows what it's doing. There are various levels of talent. They're constructed very differently. They're all pretty solid defensively. Three of the four made upgrades at the trade deadline. I look at it, and as I've been saying, if you take any two of those four, and tell me that they're in the conference finals, I'll believe you. And if you tell me any one of those four teams is going to be playing in June, I'll believe you, because there's no overwhelming argument in favor or to dismiss any of them.